welcome to another episode of GT Radio. And tonight I have a super interesting guy. He's pretty amazing, got a lot of great stories. Welcome, Michael Frawley, to the show. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Tino. Appreciate it.
No problem. So we were talking a little bit before this. You were telling me that there's a big difference between operating a business quarter to quarter than having a vision for the future. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, you know, I've worked on both sides of the fence. I've worked on the side of the fence where, you know, you're dealing with investors and things like that. And, you know, we want top line. We want bottom line. This quarter was bad. That quarter was bad. What's the guidance for next quarter? And it's a lot different. And it's much more preferable to me to operate a business in perpetuity, because it gives you an opportunity to plan for 5 years, for longer. Where are we going to be in 10 years? Are we going to diversify? Are we not going to diversify? What are we going to do? And, you know, again, I have to say it, I'm not a big fan of working for large corporations anymore. I'm doing this since, I don't even want to say, over 40 years. And I've worked in all kinds of environments, and environments that were very highly political, highly corporate, which just became, they really weren't, there was no passion in it for me. There was no creativity. You know, a couple of people at the top get a little bit of creativity, but once you take that away from people and you're working for these large companies, the creativity goes away. And once that happens, it's just becomes a gig. It's just, you know, I do my 8 hours and I go home. I don't do that now. I don't do that. I mean, I haven't done it in a long time. I haven't worked for a corporation in, and I worked for private equity for about 8 years, and loved working with them. They were great. But before that, worked for companies, which I won't say, and I did not enjoy it at all. Did not, you know, like I say, it just becomes a job, and a job without passion, a job without where you feel effective, where you're making a difference. What's the point? I just,
yeah,
you know, at my age, right, you want to put your heart in it. You don't want to just mark time. The quickest way to, even with my staff, is you continually have to make sure that they feel effective and that they're making a change in what they're doing. And they're not just a cog in a wheel that's just standing there pretending to do something, which is what I found. I'm being honest. It's what I found. You know, you're pretending to be busy. You're pretending to be thinking. You are going to these meetings every week thinking, geez, I got to go to a weekly meeting. What do I have to say? And how do I say it? And should I say something? And shouldn't I say something? I love meetings. I mean, I hate meetings, but I love meetings that have a lot at the set. I love meetings where everybody's yelling and screaming, but in a good way. Nobody's calling anybody's baby ugly. But everybody's fighting for passion for what they believe in. And I find that as the years went by, that passion was diminished and diminished. And to tell you the truth, it wasn't encouraged. It was almost like, you know, if you have an idea, keep it to yourself. Me, I love a good tussle. I love a good, you know, the older you get, the less ego you have about these gigs. The less ego you have about being a general manager or COO or a president or anything like that, because you've been through the mill enough. And when you lose these jobs, you're nobody again. You're just another guy online at Gelson's waiting to get checkout who nobody returns your phone calls. So you're really nobody special. The special time is when you're on the job. That's when you're special, when you can do something that you're proud of. You know, I was lucky enough to be thrown into situations that I had no business in, and you become the guy or you don't become the guy. I was lucky enough to get involved in construction project in Southern California for building casinos. Right? I was lucky enough to have great mentors that helped me and let me go to the edge of the table and pulled me back when I was about to screw up, which was pretty often. So, you know, and that's how you learn. And you're able, in a business that you know is going to be operating for a long time, and there's not, you're not dictated by the price of a stock of whether you have a job or whether you don't have a job, all right? So, or somebody is going to have a takeover, whether it be hostile or whether it be welcome or whatever it is, and you're continually worrying about that when you should be worrying about the business, the customer experience, how to be creative, how to use technology. You don't have time for that because you're worried about everything that's going on. Did we have a good quarter? How are we going to make the numbers great for the quarter? I went to a financial review today. All right, my ownership went like this. You know, we're doing great for the year. We were over for the month, for the year to date. We had a bad month. They go, everybody has a bad month. What's your plans for next month? And you go over your plans. You don't go in empty-handed. But, you know, it's, I've have other jobs where, you know, you turn in a budget and you say, we're going to make this much money. And they say, well, that's not enough. And you go, well, how much would you like it to be? And then you make the budget. And again, nobody pays attention to it. You end up looking at what you did last year. And I know if you have people listening that work for large corporations, they should be shaking their heads. Yes, who knows if they are. But I've been in situations like that a million times. Well, the budget's not enough. We need to make this. Okay. Well, I can tell you how we can do it. Nope, we don't have the capital for that. Okay. You know, I guess, you know, you had these jobs where just because they think that you have experience and you're an alchemist, that you're going to take coal and turn it into gold just by your presence. It doesn't work that way. You need to have collaborators. And to tell you the truth, that's what I miss the most about some of the last few jobs that I've had. I missed the ability to collaborate, to trade ideas with people and learn things. Because as long as I've been doing this, you know, you realize that you really, sometimes you don't know that much. Like I moved, I work right now out of the Palm Springs area. And it's a highly Latin culture. I didn't realize how little I knew about the different kinds of Latin culture, the different musics, the different food tastes, all of those things. And I love that stuff because, again, you're learning things. But the most important thing is you're allowing your people to educate you. You're allowing the people that you work with, your direct reports, to advise you. And that makes them part of the team. That makes them part of what goes on. And, you know, a lot of people thought that when I, even in other jobs, I've had jobs where I'm walking in and the other general manager is walking out. It always turned out to be a turnaround situation for me. I've always ended up, for some reason, in turnaround situations. And some I've done great and some I could have done better, but what I found is you got to keep your ears open on this kind of stuff. Not everybody that runs these places is a dummy. All right, you go to a place I've worked in a place, and I won't mention it, but I was the 16th general manager. Are you telling me every one of those general managers was a dummy? I don't think so. So if you don't have collaboration, if you can't, like I say, every guy there was an idiot. No. It doesn't work that way. I was not the smartest one of the 16. I certainly like to think that I was reasonably competent. But if you don't have collaboration and somebody just drops you in and won't work with you because of embedded cultural norms or whatever it is, all right, it's never, or when somebody says, I know I got the right guy to fix it, it doesn't work that way. You should be scared. When somebody says that, like you're going to make a difference all by yourself. You're nobody without a great team. And I'm really blessed right now. I'm really blessed that I have a great team that will tell me when they think I'm wrong, will tell me when they think I'm right, and will argue with me till the day is long. But they understand that, you know, the boss is the boss and I'm accountable for the decisions, you know, And I also live by the rule of no surprises. I'm fairly simple in my management style. I live by the rule of no surprises. Don't surprise me with bad news. Don't surprise me with good news. Take the good news as well as you take the bad news in the same. And your people will come to you all the time. And I think I mentioned before, if they don't come to you, you got a lot of problems. If nobody's running in out of your office saying, I need your help for something, I guess they think that you can't do it, you're ineffective, or you're just not interested in helping them, which is a recipe for disaster. And I've been involved with those too. And those are the most difficult ones. Fortunately, I don't have that problem this time, so I'm very, very grateful for the people I work with. And I try to, and I try my best, and I can always try harder, but I try my best to show my appreciation as much as I can. I'm really blessed with the staff that I have. They're so eager and ready to learn and so enthusiastic and have a great sense of urgency and don't have that, you know, and I've had this before where they go, you know what, dude, I've seen him come and I've seen him go and I'll be here when you're gone. So do what you got to do. I don't have that problem anymore. And it's very refreshing.
It's really cool. Tell me a little bit about your background. Tell me a little bit about your background. Where were you born? How did you grow up? Where, you know?
I am from New York City. Was born and raised in the Bronx in New York and spent time up in North Jersey. Went on an interview as a young, you know, as a young college student. I gave a guy a ride to an interview and he goes, do you want to interview for resorts? And you want to interview? And I go, for a dealer? And the only dealer I knew at the time were the ones I knew in college and they certainly weren't in gambling. So I said, okay, fine. I'll go. And, my buddy didn't get the job. I got the job because I made him laugh and I made my interviewer laugh and, told a lot of jokes and said I had no experience. Next thing you know, they go, you're just the guy we're looking for, which is very unusual. You think about that. You go there, you don't care about the job, right? You say, I don't know nothing about this job. I haven't the faintest clue on how to do it. And they go, well, you're hired. So I was like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And I was part of the first casino in Atlantic City. I was a crap dealer. Went to go work for Caesars, which was a wonderful company at the time. It was a wonderful company. And stayed there probably stayed there for 13 years because I really didn't take the business that seriously at the time. And this sounds really, really funny, but I wanted to be an actor. And this was my waiting tables job. And if anybody is listening that worked with me at Caesars, they're laughing about it now because I would have to trade days and say, look, I got to go on audition to New York. And I need the day off. And I used to take the bus up to New York. I would audition all day. And then I would shave in the bathroom at Caesars, put on a suit, and work all night. And everybody asked me, they go, well, were you a good actor? And I said, well, do you see me on TV? But if you name a movie in the 80s, I probably auditioned for it that needed like a thug, a truck driver, because, you know, they want that Italian New York kind of thing.
Sure.
Then I went down to Mississippi Gulf Coast and it changed my life about the business. And it was a huge lesson for me because I can remember sitting in a meeting with the owner of the company. And, you know, when I worked at Caesars, you know, and probably for good reason, nobody took me really that seriously because I was interested in show business. And, I can remember said, I'm going to give this business one more shot because I already had a job offer out in Los Angeles in production and said, I'm going to give this business one more shot. And I went down to Biloxi with some very good friends of mine. And it was a real adventure for me. So I'm sitting around a table and we're opening a casino and the owner of the company says, well, what do you think, Frawley? And I about knocked me off my chair. Nobody ever asked me what I thought before. And so I gave my opinion about what we should do. And the owner of the company said, that's good. We're going to do that. And I almost like passed out. So now I was part. But the issue is, I mean, it's a funny story and everything, but the issue is that you're all of a sudden you're part of something. all of a sudden you have a stake. And it was a real lesson
mm-hmm.
for me that you have
mm-hmm.
a stake in this now. And you're responsible for this idea. And you have a stake in something, which I guess that's – it really changed me. It changed my idea about the business. It also changed my idea that the philosophy of the company, because it was growing so fast, was to give everybody an opportunity to succeed. Was to, if they saw a spark in you, they took advantage of it. So they immediately, I guess they saw something in me, and moved me to slots, moved me to all kinds of different things so I would learn, made me in charge at night in the absence of a general manager as a shift manager, because in those days, the shift manager was in charge of everything. And you go through all these adventures, so many of them, I could write a book on it. I mean, but I was always learning something. And when you're always learning something, people are taking an interest in you and you're learning something. And that carried with me through my career. I mean, from there, you know, I've gone to Louisiana. I got my first vice president's job in Louisiana as a table game, then slots. Then I went to Puerto Rico and learned about resorts, destination resorts. And I can remember going to the general manager and saying, I want to learn hotel. And he goes, why, Michael? This is an easy job. And I went, my friend, you're not supposed to tell me that. I work for you. You're not supposed to tell me that. And I said, I want to learn hotel. Then I want to go to F&B. And I want to learn that. Because I did have a plan. I did want to learn other things. I did not want to be known as in the industry as a one-trick pony. And I guess a good thing or a bad thing is when I'm in, I'm really in. I become obsessed. I'm not real big on moderation. And that's a good thing and a bad thing. And when I wanted to learn. I wanted to go everywhere. I wanted to learn how to cook. And some of the things I would say, I want to park cars tonight. I can remember when I worked in Colorado. I worked in Black Hawk, Colorado. And I wanted to learn how to park cars. And I said, I want to park some cars tonight. So I went down to valet with a couple of pizzas and bribed them and said, I want to do it. And they were laughing at me. It was certainly entertaining to watch the general manager pull into a tiny, tiny car space and take him 15 minutes to do it until they taught me. But there's a secondary effect to all this. You start to develop relationships with people because for some reason people view people in these positions as like not regular people. Like it's really weird. It's like when I tell people, I said, look, when I worked at Caesars, I used to call them sick just like everybody else. I called in sick from Acapulco. I called in sick from golf courses. I was not the greatest employee. All right. But the one thing is I know all the tricks, but then when I became very serious about the business, I became super serious about it and tried to learn everything I can. And I was very lucky to have people who took an interest in me and mentored me, people that were secure in their own gigs that were able to say, no, Michael, this is how you'll do it. And in our business, and like I say, I don't foster that environment, so I'm not sure how it is in other places anymore, but there are no stupid questions. But when I was coming up, and I'll tell you a quick story, I remember dealing craps as a child, and there was a box man next to me, and this was probably, again, in the late 70s, and he said, I said, well, what about this? What about that? What about this move? How do I become a better dealer? How about this? And I got blabby, and he looked at me, and he went, you know what? Why don't you shut up? I was like, what? He goes, just shut up. He goes, I learned the hard way, and you're going to learn the hard way. And that's how this business works. And I was like, okay. So, but the advantage that I think you have, that I have, is I've sat in those seats before, you know, purposely. I was a floor man. I was a shift boss. I worked in slots. I know what it was like to deal with customers. I cooked. I parked cars. I worked in slot change. And some of it as a general manager, some of it as a vice president, because I wanted to see what it was like. So when you communicate with your staff and they know that you're not just some guy that came in, and I'm not disparaging education or anything like that, but you're not just some guy in at an MBA school, right, doing things, but you understand the feelings of the people within the business. And if you're going to eliminate and you're trying to change culture, because in turnarounds, usually you have a culture that is the culprit for the failure of the business. And it always ends up in the corner office. It's a mirror of who is sitting in that chair. So I'm fortunate enough to be able to having done all of these things, having known what it's like to hear BS, what it's known to be like where the safest answer is no, what it's like not to be listened to, what it's like to be listened to. So you learn all of these things, and as you start to progress in your career, you take these things with you if you're smart. You take these things with you, and you understand that you're still that dealer. You're still that guy parking cars. You're no better than anybody else, and your employees will sense that. Your employees will sense that you understand what you're going through, and I guess the best word to use would be empathy. And I've had to make some really, really difficult decisions, especially in Atlantic City, which bother me to this day. And I guess if you lose the quality of empathy, you're kind of screwed. At least I would think so. That as far as your management style, as far as what you do, you're kind of screwed. And, you look, people have livelihoods, and sometimes people take it seriously. I've always thought that those people on the floor are my responsibility. They're my responsibility. They're the people that you should be looking out for, because they look out for the customers, which is what it's all about. You know, and the best information I get is being able to sit down at a table or sit down at the bar and talk to a bartender and say, what is it that I should be doing? What is it that I'm doing? And just tell me the truth. Don't worry about it. And if you're approachable, it becomes really easy. They go, Michael, and this is stuff like, you know, we need sharp knives in the kitchen. And you buy sharp knives, and they go, you're my hero. And I'm like, for that?
Yeah.
You know, it gets so easy for people, and that's about a business in perpetuity. That's about a business in which I feel that I thrive. I thrive in a business that, you know what, don't worry about your job. Worry about the customer. Do your job. Do a good job, all right? And I always tell them this. I said, look, a good day is a day when you go home without a headache, and you might want to come back tomorrow. That's a good day. When people feel like they're part of that organization, and then I go back to me sitting at that table and having that change in my attitude and having that change in, you know, what I thought of the business, it truly changed my life. And I feel very, very fortunate to have all of these experiences and the mentors to give me those experiences. And some of them have been great, and some of them have been absolutely awful. And, you know, sometimes I guess you can learn a lot more from a bad mentor, somebody that, you know, I've worked with guys that could screw a place up in 2 weeks and not even realize it, which is dumbfounding to me. So that's kind of, you know, I've been lucky enough to work in so many jurisdictions, and, you know, it drove my wife crazy. You know, I've had 13 houses. My wife is very tired now. I'm not planning on going anywhere else. And that's a different feeling for me, but I've worked everywhere from Puerto Rico to Colorado to Mississippi to New Mexico, Southern California, Louisiana twice, Mississippi twice, Atlantic City twice, just back and forth. you know, and there's value. It's very tiring, but there's a lot of value in picking, having your, I guess, your experience basket and picking something up from it as you go.
Yeah, it's just an accumulation of experiences through your life, right?
Yeah, and you know what? I find that at times, especially when you're dealing with, and I guess I don't want to turn it into a, when you're dealing with recruiters and things like that, I find it very rare that, you know, occasionally I get calls from recruiters, not as much as I used to because I'm really not interested, but that recruiters are more interested in whether you have an MBA or whether, and that's probably because of things in the past with very large companies, and whether you have an MBA or anything like that, instead of really getting in depth about what is it that you can contribute? What is it that, you know, are you a free thinker? Yes, well, we're not looking for a free thinker. Okay. You know, okay. Mm-hmm. And also, I'm blessed to have, and this is something that I'm starting to see as a trend that disturbs me, especially since I'm starting to get a little bit older, is having a multi-generational workforce. Because the ability to mentor people, you're not going to get somebody that's 26 years old is going to mentor a 21-year-old because they're not secure enough in their job. They're not secure enough in their abilities. Most of the time, if you get somebody like myself, and certainly the people that mentored me that were very secure in their abilities and very eager to pass on what they know to you, if you're smart enough to just listen, you know, and I see that trend, especially in some of the larger companies of late, of not seeing that, not understanding that experience accounts for something. But certainly experience that, you know, I'm always reading about technology. I'm always reading about how technology makes things more efficiency, how technology increases guest experience. I mean, you definitely have to stay up on that, and it takes a lot of work. It's almost like being a doctor. If you don't read medical journals and understand what the latest thing is, you're going to be left behind. So I've always been a gearhead, and I've always been a gadget head. So any gadget you got, I'll look at. So I love gadgets. I do. I love gadgets, and I love I'm looking at kitchen equipment now and learning about the latest in kitchen equipment, and it's just amazing some of the things that you can do that can do great food, offer consistency, efficiency, and make life easier for your employees. And once you start doing that, man, you get this, you know, esprit de corps, and you get people going, like they say, like, thank you for the knives. And you're like, okay. So, you know, it's so simple. It's so simple. It's right in front of you all the time. You know, I remember a boss I had that worked for, and I'm loathe to name names, but you would know the name if I heard. I worked for a boss who worked for a company that was run by a very well-known gaming person, legendary gaming person. And the best thing that what I, you know, you walk through the pit or you walk through the housekeeping department and have a meeting and say, what is it that you guys need? We need vacuums. Okay. We need better walkie-talkies. Okay. And why they don't get them and why, and these are turnarounds that I go into and why they don't get them. And, you know, there are various reasons why they don't get the tools they need to do the job, because people are being penny wise and pound foolish, or they didn't make their numbers for the quarter. I mean, I've worked in places on a turnaround where instead of using cleaning fluid, they were using water in spray bottles to clean. You try to understand that, and you try to rationalize how that in the grand scheme of things will increase a guest experience, will enhance a guest experience. But sometimes it goes down to bottom line. Sometimes guys like me are under pressure and they're frustrated. Thankfully, I don't have to do that anymore. I work for very understanding people who actually have confidence in me. And, of course, my opinions are all based on data. You know, I make data, I make promises as far as this is what it's going to do, this is the return, this is what you're going to get, and it's going to be budgeted that way, and I'm accountable. So once you know, you're ready to put your head on the block for something that you truly believe in, it makes things a lot easier if you have people that believe in you. And that seems to be a scarcity now, at least in my experience.
Yeah, it's more a kind of like a distant relationship rather than really getting to know people, having conversations. The world's changed a little bit with all the
I don't mean to interrupt, but it all goes back to passion. It all goes back to caring. It all goes back to, and that all goes back to the guy who sits in the big chair. That goes back to the guy who sits in the big chair. And like I say, and I will always say it, what goes down on the floor is a mirror image of what goes on in the executive offices. It really is. And you have to lead by example. Because if you're not down there, if you're not able to go sit in the host office, which I do often, I go talk to the host. Saturday night, I'll go sit in the host office because it gives me a chance to get out of the cave. And I go in there and I go, what do I need to do? What are the customers telling you? I go to the slot people. What are they telling you? And you take notes and you take pictures and you say, we need to do this. We need to do that. Now, some of it is like, yeah, we need to build a 1,000-room hotel tower. Well, thanks, but can you give me something a little simpler? You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's a wealth of knowledge that you can garner if you can lose your ego and realize that you're just a regular guy. And I'm not saying everybody in this position is that way, but it happens. It happens. You lose your perspective. You lose your perspective about why you got into the business. Me, I love the psychological puzzle. I love to know why people go left and people go right. I love to know why design, how people feel about design, because to me it's a puzzle. And I love having a problem and then sitting with a bunch of people on a whiteboard and saying, okay, let's break this down. Let's distill this thing down and work on the puzzle. And then have people that are brave enough to give the craziest suggestions and you don't ridicule them. You know, I'll go back to a story that when I used to audition and the rare times that I did work, I worked with directors and – which also taught me, you know, my father always told me, you go on all these auditions, what a waste of time. No, it's not a waste of time. You walk into a room with people who they don't know you. You're walking in from the cold. You're laying yourself out there and they're looking at you and judging you. And then you get rejected and you never know why. But it toughens you up and it makes you be able to walk into places and do different things. All right. And after a while, you get to the point where you don't care anymore about what the people in front of you are thinking. You just say what's on your mind. And that's what I need. I don't need people to tell me what they think I'm going to think. Like the same thing with the director. If you go like this to a film director, and you and I have talked about this because you're in the industry. And if you tell them, if the actor gives you what you think you want, they're going to screw up every time. They got to give you what they have. They don't give you what they think you want. You can give advice and say, okay, this is what you're doing. This is how you're doing. Show me something. Those are the best directors, not the directors that go, this is what I want you to do, this, this, and this, and this. And then you give this stiff performance, which, believe it or not, relates to what we do. Because we're always on stage when we go on the floor. All we are entertainers. We're all selling the same product. All we are entertainers. So, you know, people may say, well, you know, dude, it's a stretch to compare an acting career to being a chief operating officer. It's really not. It's really not. And you take a lot of that stuff with you. So I've been really lucky. I wish I would have got more acting jobs, but I've been really lucky.
Let's talk a little bit about work ethic. I know that we have discussed this before, and you're a big believer in hard work and being thorough, and a lot of people think it's easy, but it's really not, right? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's you know what I mean? It's like, it's deceptive. It's deceptive, you know, as let's just put it from a turnaround perspective. It's deceptive that you're going to go in there and you're going to work hard. But working hard is not about, and I tell my coworkers, I shouldn't say my people, and I could tell my coworkers all the time that your family life and your personal life is just as important as your work life. I don't judge people by the amount of hours that they work. All right. To me, that's not hard work. Staying at work for 14 or 15 hours a day does not impress me. All right. Bringing something to the table that makes a difference, whether it takes 2 hours or 40 hours, is what impresses me. Believe it or not, those of us that have careers, there are careers and then there are jobs. Those of us that have careers are always working, always. If you are in a hotel, you can't help but go like this. Like me, I look at the bottom of the plates. I look at the silverware. I look at can I see the kitchen? I'll go, can I see the kitchen to see how they work? Because there may be an idea that I can steal. Or there may be something that I can look at. Do you use a database? Do you not use a database? That's work. Work is not sitting at a desk writing. Sometimes I sit at my desk and my assistant, who I have to give her, who is my favorite assistant in the whole world, Marie, I'll just sit at my desk and she'll think I'm staring off into space while I'm looking at a whiteboard. I have like four or five whiteboards in my office. And I just think, and I say, okay. And I try to put things into perspective and think of, normally, if I get a great idea, the first offer, you know, in my head is, okay, how do I screw this up? How do I mess this up? Of course, since I thought of it, it's going to be a success, but now I have to think about how I can screw it up. And to me, that's work. Work is not something that, you know, is has to be hard. Work has to be productive. Work has to be satisfying. Work has to be spending time with your family and getting going like this. I'm ready to go to work and kick ass. That's work. And it's really hard to change that perspective, that when you go in there and people think because they spend 12 hours in the office a day, that it's like a badge of honor. It's what you bring to the table that's the badge of honor. And that's what I prioritize. But for me, I'm always looking at things. I watch TV or I see something or you're always working, always. And because you have a passion for it. But when you go to a place, and I'll go back to being a turnaround guy, you have, like I said, you have these embedded cultural norms. And some people will want to go along with you and some people will not. And that's when the difficult decisions have to happen. Because as nice guy as I am, I don't suffer fools. I will not suffer a fool. I will give everybody a chance they succeed. All right. You can either come with me or you can make a decision that it'd be best for both of us not to come with me. And I'm not shy about that either. All right. But I will do anything I can to develop somebody if they want to be developed. If you don't, well, we should part ways and you should do what you think is best. But it's very hard to go into a place that's been operation for decades and start to try to change the culture. That takes hard work, and it takes a lot of dedication. And it, to tell you the truth, it really never ends. It really never ends. It took me a while to change the culture where I am now, and I still have work to do. But I know that I'm making progress, and that makes me happy, and I feel effective, and that's what work is all about. That you feel effective, you feel you're making a difference. You're not just some dude that's punching the clock, because I've been there before, and it's just not good for me. I don't, like I say, either I'm in or I'm out. And if I just have to punch a clock, I'm way out. So I don't survive in that.
Where does your passion come from?
I think it comes from my dad. I think it comes from my dad because, you know, my dad was very ambitious. My dad was very honest. He still is. He's my idol in a lot of ways, as far as his work ethic, his honesty, his sense of fair play, sense of compassion. I think it was the way that I was raised. And plus, you know, I wanted to be successful, but successful in my own way, successful from a self-realization point of view. You know, I was not a great student. I was not, you know, I have, and I'll be, you know, I be personal, you know, I have, anybody that's worked with me knows it. You know, I have ADD, which I love. You know, my son has it. And I said, you have to keep this power under control. If this, mm-hmm. if the ADD power was to get into the wrong hands, we would have disaster. So mm-hmm. with me, and if you know anybody with ADD, it's almost like having two wheels in your head. One is going one way, one is going the other way. So you're always, it makes you, to me, it makes you more creative. It makes you more sense of urgency. And when you're creating something or doing a new program or trying to create something, since it's your baby, you want it to be successful. Or somebody comes up with a great idea, it seems very foreign to me how you wouldn't work hard to make it successful. I honestly don't know any other way to work. And even when I wasn't interested in the business and I was auditioning, I put as much into doing that, you know, sleeping on the bus on the way to New York, getting off at, you know, whatever, 2 or 4 in the morning, sleeping on the bus on the way to New York, going on 3 or 4 auditions, then taking the bus back and sleeping, and then working all night and then doing it again the next day. So I really don't know any, and that energy that I put into that is the energy that I put into my job now. I guess it's just ingrained in me, but it probably came from my dad. The short answer, yes.
Great. Should we take some calls?
Yeah, sure.
Let's do it. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Michael?
Yes. Hi, Tino. Hi, Michael. It's Heidi and Tizana from Temecula. How
hey,
are you guys
how are
tonight?
You?
I am
How's
wonderful. And
up
I'm
there?
Just. Oh, it's awesome. Absolutely awesome.
I know it is.
How's Coachella Valley?
Doing fine. We're doing fine. We're doing fine.
Wonderful.
I'll tell you a story. I can remember when I was one of the builders of Valley View Casino, and this is, again, probably you're way too young to remember this, but I can remember going up to Temecula, and they were trailers. They were double wide trailers, and
wow.
It's just amazing what a great job you guys have done up there. It's just an amazing property.
So I'm not in with Valley View. I'm an independent consultant. I work with the casino leaders on influence and impact. So, but
okay.
I live in Temecula. But
oh, okay.
So I know Valley View, etc. So, Michael, you've absolutely I've taken so many notes. I was taken by surprise when Tino put me on because I've got so many questions for you. And you just are really, really – you're like a toolbox of these amazing golden nuggets. So the first thing I wanted to ask you very quickly is that you wrote this great article – and it was about a good COO is never undercover. which I absolutely love. And what I wanted to know from, I know you've crashed a forklift, you've burned stakes, and I want to know, what was your biggest lesson when working on the front line, or your biggest experience that you had?
My biggest experience on all of them was pretty much identical, because it was mostly from a psychological point of view. I mean, it was very entertaining for the people to watch. I built great relationships while people watched me screw up. But it also was more psychological than anything else, so I could put myself in their place. So when they spoke with me, I was able to speak their language. I was able to understand. It's almost the same thing as when I came here and was totally unfamiliar, I mean, with the culture and what would be successful in the culture and what wouldn't. So most of these jobs that I've taken to do it, it was more about psychology. It was more about putting myself in that place and imagining they were dealing with somebody like me and what would motivate them. You know, I knew it from being a dealer. I knew it from being a floor man. I knew it from being a slot attendant or doing slot change. And that was part of my training program when I was with a company. But I still wanted to understand, even in Puerto Rico, I wanted to understand what it was like to work the front desk. So when I spoke to somebody and they would say, what is it that you need? They would be able to speak whatever lingo it was, and I would understand it. Well, I made beds. I did all of that stuff because I wanted to understand what it was like. And Puerto Rico was a great opportunity for me because they have a slow season. And during the slow season, there was like, you know, I don't have the attention span for golf. If golf was seven holes, I'd love it.
It's going to be nine.
If it was
seven
holes or even three holes, I would love it. Okay, I don't get – I just don't have the attention span for it. So the only thing to do in Puerto Rico was to play golf. But I went to my boss and said, I want to do all this different stuff. And I learned a ton. But but what was the common denominator through all of these jobs was to put yourself in their place psychologically. Because the one thing that I knew from working for large corporations as a line employee – was nonsense, and I could use another word, was nonsense when I heard it, was not having, with management, not having the credibility they should have had, and feeling that you were just a cog in the wheel, and feeling that you're going to do the same thing and you had no part in what was going on. And that's up to leadership to go talk to you. Now, you can't please everybody, and people are going to be angry, but it's amazing that if you sit down for some reason, and again, that you have, you know, somebody in, I get, and I hate to say, somebody in my position to sit down and say, and sit in the kitchen on a Saturday night and talk to people, that it makes their day. It's very flattering to me.
Absolutely.
It's very flattering to me that it makes their day to say, how's it going? What are you doing? Can I try it? Sure, go ahead, give it a shot.
Right.
And then they laugh, and it's, and you really have done nothing.
Yeah, and it's something so easy that it's something so easy that it's not being done and applied more effectively, right? So,
right.
Michael, you know, I'm also intrigued by your whole acting career, and you know, you've spoke so much about
it
through this. And
if that's what you want to call it, I'm flattered again.
Well, and I think very few people on this call know that you also trained to be a marine biologist. And if you go to your LinkedIn banner, it's the strangest LinkedIn banner I've ever seen. But it's dolphins with men in suits, which is shows your creativity. But that's a whole other conversation. But William Shakespeare said, all the world's a stage and all men and women are merely players on that stage, which is really, you know, sort of sums up everything you said. But from your acting abilities, what do you think served you in business today, and especially in the way of how you can influence and impact your team?
I think, as far as acting goes, from a point of trying to be another character, that has little to do with it. But understanding, you know, and this is an overused word, you know, it's funny because I went to acting school for almost 8 years and my father laughs at me. He said, you could have been a neurosurgeon after 8 years instead of, you know, what you're doing. But one of the things that you learn is you give what you get. All right. If mm-hmm. if you're able to understand, like, one thing I loved was improv. And from improv, listening is important. You have to listen. You have to understand where the person is coming from so you can come back with something else. So what acting does is you need – there's empathy, all right? There's listening. And the most important thing is you give what you get. In my the other thing it's given me is the ability to walk into a room and not be afraid, to walk in front of a group of people and not be afraid and speak what's on your mind. I mean, I can, you know, they say that public speaking is the number one fear. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love
mm-hmm.
it. I loved being on stage. I loved the whole creativity part of it.
Do you have any tips on how to show up as a leader with great presence? Because I think just by the sound of your voice and by your visuals, you know, you already portray yourself as with great presence. Is there anything that you could give us in terms of that?
Yeah, and I do. I do. I ask. Usually I'll hold, especially if it's a bad situation where, like, just say a GM has left under bad circumstances and you're kind of the new guy and everybody's worried about their jobs. And are you going to bring in your own guys, which I think is really stupid. I mean, I'm sure I shouldn't say that. It's probably not the wise. but the first question I usually ask is I go around the table and I say, what's my job? What is it that you think that I do? Well, what do you think that I will do? And they make a joke and say, we're probably going to fire everybody. No, I'm not going to do that. Because that would be stupid, because you know where all the bodies are buried here. And it would take me 6 months to find the bathroom without you. So what I ask is, what is it that you think that I do? And you'll get all these answers. They'll say, well, you keep the numbers and you answer to corporate and you do all that. And I say, those are all great answers. But what I do is I'm a servant. I'm a servant.
Mm-hmm.
And they, like I said, it doesn't mean that I'm going to serve you, you know, tea at four, or I'm going to be mm-hmm. your valet, but I am here to serve you. I am here to make sure that you have the tools you need to do your job. And everybody gets really quiet about that. And I think I wrote an article about that, about being a servant manager and the value of being a servant manager, because what you have to do is toss away your ego and admit that you're a servant, because that's what you are. You're responsible for your staff, and your staff is responsible for everybody on that floor. And the day that you forget that, you're screwed, because then you become an ivory tower manager that just dictates from the top. But you're a servant. Make no mistake. You are there to service your people. And if you keep that in mind, and I tell them that the day that I treat you poorly, the day that I snap at you, the day that I don't respect you, you have permission to do that. But until that day comes, you don't. So that kind of
– wonderful.
Everybody gets kind of perplexed by that. And they're like, I've never heard that before.
Well, I love that. Well – thank you, Michael. You are, again, a wonderful mentor, I'm sure, to everybody and to your team.
You.
And I really, really appreciate the golden nuggets. And thank you, Tino, again. Have a good
evening. Thank you. Have a good night. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for the call.
Great questions.
That was a good one.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to have to log back in because the system's giving me a hassle. So that happens once in a while. Welcome to the land of technology.
I tell you, I'm a gadget head, if I can help you.
Yeah, exactly. No, sometimes it just doesn't want to cooperate. It's a great system though. It's easy to use, but it's a little buggy. All right, let's just see if this works. Okay, here we go. I think we should be fine here now. Here we go. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Michael?
Hey, Tino, Michael, this is Jeff.
How are
I
you?
really appreciate you having me on the show, and I have been just glued to the phone because everything you've been talking about is really pulling on my work heartstrings, I guess is a way to
Oh,
say
thank
it.
you. I'm flattered. Thank
No,
you.
yeah, I just I really 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 respect your value on empathy and organizational culture. It truly is tough to you don't see empowerment these days as much, and it's awesome to hear such a strong, refreshing opinion about it. So, what I wanted to ask you about, I'm a young person in the industry, and I want to be a well-rounded executive someday, and I just wanted to know, do you think it's as easy these days to jump from discipline to discipline, whether it was when you were a GM or a lower level, and to learn in that way, and how do you, what kind of advice do you have for approaching that challenge?
There are a couple of ways that I don't think it's any, I think it's a little bit more difficult on one level that, some of the job descriptions that I read are absolutely, for some of these places, are ridiculous. They want, an MBA, they want this, they want that, they want this. And, like I say, there's no substitute for education. But to me, the biggest thing is enthusiasm. And I think I mentioned this, and I think there's a clip on it. If there's a crappy job, take it. If there's a job that nobody else wants to go to, take it. If I can remember volunteering for jobs, and they would go, "Well, who wants to do this?" And they would go, "Anybody but Frawley," because I would always raise my hand. And I moved a lot because I did not want to become part of the furniture. I drove my wife crazy because I was always looking. I had a plan. I had a plan. I knew what I wanted to do. What I can tell you is this: volunteer for the craziest jobs that nobody else wants. Throw the lazy people, let them go their way. All right? Because there's no, if you think about this in your life, there's no such, think about any comedian, think about any actor, think about anybody on TV. Enthusiasm is contagious. If you have enthusiasm for what you work and you do the right thing and you don't talk about people and people understand you as a straight up guy and you're a straight ahead guy, you don't get involved in politics, you do your job, you do the best job you can do, right, whatever it is, and then find yourself a mentor because they will come to you. If you have that attitude and somebody sees that spark in you, they will come to you, especially if you're in a business. Now, if you're in with a big company, it's going to be a little bit more difficult. I got lucky because I was in startup companies and did it, but there are still positions open, all right, within smaller companies that will eventually lead you to a bigger company, or you may end up running that smaller company because people see something in you. The one thing that I talked about the acting and I talked about leadership and things like that. There's, if you have that spark, somebody will recognize a spark of leadership. Somebody will recognize that you can rise above everybody else. And that's my strongest advice is two things. And volunteer for anything nobody wants to do, but make sure that you can learn from it. Make sure that it's to your advantage. Like something stupid. Like I can remember they needed a shift manager on grave shift when I was first starting out. Nobody wanted to do it. I'll do it. I'll go. It's going to screw up my family life. It's going to screw up everything. But there is a method to the madness. So what I would do is this, and I don't mean to take the circuitous route with you, but what I would do is this. First of all, make yourself a plan. What is it that you want to be? What position are you in now?
I'm an affiliate marketing manager.
Great.
Which is,
okay, great.
Yeah. Yep.
Because that's a great, that's a great field to get into. That's great. All right. But make sure, get somebody that understands, okay, that will decide where you want to go in marketing. Is it going to be on the database side? Because you're going to need to learn it to you, because obviously you're going to want to be a VP of marketing. You're going to want to be able to chart the course of the business model that whatever you choose, and you're going to have to solve that psychological puzzle. So those are the goals that you have to look at. Set up your goals and say, okay, I need to learn database. I need to learn, if you don't know it already, I'm just making an assumption. Or I need to understand player development. Or I need to understand the financials of how this is going to work. What are the financial metrics that I'm going to be needing to be a good marketing person? So when someone speaks to me, I understand it. And it's, if you find a mentor, it's very difficult, at least it is for me, for someone that goes, will you help me, to say no. Because if you, that's a fool's errand to turn somebody that really wants to learn, to turn them away. So I would find, again, make yourself a plan. I had a fairly specific plan. I can remember telling my wife when I moved to Colorado and saying, we're going to be here for 2 years until I figure this out, and then we're moving on. I already knew what I wanted to do. What is it that you want to do? What is your ultimate goal?
My goal is to create something, whether it's a program or a new department or just basically something new, like you said, that nobody else is doing. Something or,
right.
You know, something that exists with a new spin on it that just is so out of the box and something that nobody else wants to do that it you know, makes a mark and it lasts and I can carry it to another place someday, something like that, you know.
Here's what will happen. What will happen is you need to absorb everything that you can. Even if you think it's mundane, you will be able to pull it out someday. Because here's what's going to happen. If you have the enthusiasm, if you get the experience, if you do all of these things, somebody's going to recognize it. And usually what happens is they will throw you into a situation, right, that you're either going to be the guy or you're not. So this becomes the old axiom. It becomes, you know, experience and preparation meet. So you've got to be prepared. And you sound like a guy that's always working. You're always looking. Always look at what everybody else is doing. And it sounds terrible, but some of the best ideas are somebody else's, and then you make them your own. Look at what everybody else is doing. And when you're at work, do everything that nobody else wants to do. You show up on time. You ask the right questions. You do all of those things. You work for a big company?
I don't, actually. I'm pretty lucky to work for a smaller company that gives me a lot of freedom and a lot of flexibility to explore my own creativity. I'm very blessed.
Well, that's great. And if you can, and if you have somebody that will go like this, look, I don't understand this financial statement. I don't understand these metrics. I don't understand. Would you help me? All right? Because they realize they're going to make you better. And once you understand the financial metrics, because here's what's going to happen. You're going to come up with some great ideas. And like when I used to work in private equity for private equity companies like that, you'll do analysis. But if you come up with some great ideas, the first question is, okay, what's the financial implications? Well, what are these financial implications? And if you can convince somebody with enthusiasm that this is it, all right? And finance, unfortunately, has become a big part of whether you're going to get the programs that you want on. So do the jobs that nobody else wants to do, because that builds a reputation that this guy can be counted on. Ask questions about, would you please take some time with me and go over a financial statement? We can take it slow. and get me into the heavier marketing metrics that you can get, the better off you're going to be, because you're speaking their language and you know what you're talking about. That's important, because here's what's going to happen. Now that you've done all this, they're going to go like this. He's a sharp guy. He's willing to do anything. All right. I can count on him, because when he does something, he does it. I'm going to tell you a story that my wife reminded me of a couple of weeks ago. I had a boss who I loved. He was like a father to me and a mentor to me. And I would run through a wall for him, and he needed some papers. And I knew that he needed them by a certain time. And I was trying to get them done and get them done and get them done. And I kept going over, because I get obsessive that I want them to be correct. And because I wanted him to have confidence in me. And I knew he was playing golf with one of the executives at a company. I went out there in a golf cart and gave him the report, because I knew that,
wow.
And he knew that I was looking out for him, because I wasn't going to wait until Monday, because he had that meeting on Monday. But I don't say that. I just said, here's the report. And it blew him away. It blew him away. Those are the things, the little things that make people notice you, because you do want to get noticed. But you want to get noticed in the right way. You want to get noticed in the way that you're not going to screw anybody over. You want to get noticed by your ability and your creativity.
Amazing.
That's
really, truly.
That's what I would do.
Awesome.
And it sounds terrible, but unfortunately, it sounds terrible. But there's a lot of people that aren't willing to suffer for what they want. And I know that my wife suffered from me moving all over the place so I could do different things. And I know that I suffered by not spending time away with my family, because I was on the road for 3 years, but I had to do it because I was learning construction. And I knew that in the end, it would do it. So sometimes you're going to have to do things. You're going to go, you know, I don't really want to do this. But you do it because you're dedicated to your career. And those things people will notice. The other thing is that you have to watch out for is you're going to make other people insecure. But guess what? That's their problem. That's their problem, not yours.
Right.
You need to be the guy that people count on. Did that help you? Did I help you at all?
So much. I mean, really,
thank you.
Really awesome. No, thank you. That was just all very refreshing to hear. So. That's it for my questions. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. Thank you
learning.
For asking.
So, yeah, 100%.
Thank you, Jeff.
Have a great night. Thanks.
Take
Tina.
Care, Jeff.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, you too, Michael. All right, bye.
Okay. Great interview, Michael. We've run out of time, but we're having you back on August 26th. So we'll continue.
Oh, geez, I don't want it
to
end. This
about.
Is great. I'm looking forward to the 26th. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, absolutely. That's why we booked another show when I interviewed you. You had so much to talk about. It's fantastic. So we got you on another show on the 26th.
I hope I didn't get too blabby.
No, not at all. Are you kidding? Everything you're saying is fantastic. And the people who are listening who didn't have an opportunity to call in, August 26th, we're having Michael back on because I thought, you know, that he had a lot to say and a lot of great stuff to say. So tune in then. And Michael, thank you so much for being on tonight, and we'll see you back on the 26th. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Happy to be there. Thanks for having me, Tino. Thanks again.
Take care, buddy.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. So August 19th, I have Jenny Cummings on the show. She's an incredible woman, GM. You're going to love her. Remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen. Have a good night, everybody. Bye-bye.